Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize, maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Welcome back to Football Army, your essential guide for navigating really just the absolute chaos of the NFL and NCAA season.
There's the perfect word for it.
We are officially in that late November stretch where everything just feels bigger. The stakes are massive. Every single snap feels like it could decide a team's entire season.
That's absolutely right. You know, if September is about figuring out who you are, late November is about trying to survive at that identity. And nothing, I mean nothing, kicks off this high-stakes period like Thanksgiving Day football.
It's the best tradition.
Yeah.
And we've got a huge slate of games that could really shake up the playoff picture in both conferences. So here's our mission for you today. We're going to break down that entire three-game Thanksgiving tripleheader. We'll get into the history, the key stats, and, our predictions.
And after that, we're diving into the big league-wide stories, the total turmoil in the NFC East, the coaching hot seats that are getting warmer by the minute, and the, well, the really polarizing rise of some of these rookie quarterbacks.
Then we're shifting to college for rivalry week. We have maybe the biggest, the game Ohio State versus Michigan that we've seen in years.
Oh, it's huge. And we'll also track the coaching carousel. You've got Jim Mora on the move and, of course, the constant speculation around Lane Kiffin.
And finally, we'll give you those essential fantasy football insights you need. That final push for the playoffs is here, and every lineup decision counts.
All right, let's get into it, starting with the tradition itself, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and you can't talk about Thanksgiving football without first talking about the man who basically was the voice of the holiday for so many of us.
The late, great John Madden.
Exactly. For me, growing up, the sounds of Thanksgiving were, you know, the parade on TV, family in the kitchen, and John Madden's voice over the game.
It's so true. He just made it feel like more than a game. And the NFL is doing a really wonderful tribute this year, making sure that legacy is front and center on all three broadcasts, Fox, CBS, and NBC.
Which is great to see.
Yeah, and the details are really thoughtful. First off, every player on all six teams will wear a special Madden patch on their jersey.
Okay.
But the part I love, the part that's just so Madden, is the coin toss.
The turducken coin.
The turducken coin. On the head side, you've got a silhouette of Coach Madden. And on the tail side, a six-legged turducken, you know, honoring his favorite holiday dish.
It's just perfectly absurd, isn't it? Only Madden could inspire that.
Right. But it's not all fun and games. It's also about the future. They're giving out a Madden Thanksgiving MVP award after each game.
And the winner gets more than just a trophy.
Exactly. The NFL Foundation makes a $10,000 donation in that player's name to a youth football program. It's just a perfect way to tie his legacy to the next generation of players.
Love that. Okay, let's get into the action. First up, the NFC North clash, Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern.
This game is just steeped in history. It's the 23rd time these two have met on Thanksgiving. That's an NFL record.
And the Lions actually have the edge on Turkey Day, right? They're 12-9-1.
Oh, they do. And look, motivation is everything for Detroit here. They got crushed by the Packers 27-13 way back in week one at Lambeau. That loss has been sitting with them all year.
You have to think they've had this one circled.
Oh, for sure. Aiden Hutchinson basically said as much. He called this, and I'm quoting, as big as any game we'll play in the regular season, this is their chance to make a statement on a national stage.
So the key to this game, it feels like it comes down to one thing for Detroit, and that's protecting Jared Goff.
That is the entire ball game. Look, Green Bay's defense, they've been quietly really good at getting after the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They generate pressure on 35% of snaps. That's the sixth highest rate in the whole league.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the killer stat for Detroit. When Jared Goff faces pressure this season, his QBR, his total quarterback rating, drops by an incredible 69 points.
69 points. That's not just a drop. That's falling off a cliff.
It's the biggest drop in the NFL. And it tells you everything you need to know. Goff is a great quarterback when he's clean, when he can throw on time. But when you force him off his spot, when that interior pressure gets there, his mechanics break down and he becomes a completely different player.
And that's exactly what the Packers defense is designed to do.
Right. They'll try to create that chaos up the middle and force him into mistakes. If Green Bay hits that 35% pressure rate, it could completely stall out Detroit's offense.
But on the flip side, the Lions have an absolute weapon who doesn't need a clean pocket to do damage.
Jahmyr Gibbs. He has been just electric. He just won his second NFC Offensive Player of the Week award in 3 weeks.
His game against the Giants was insane. 219 scrimmage yards, 3 touchdowns. He's averaging, 194 yards over his last 3.
It's unbelievable production. And he's on the verge of making some serious history.
Right, the touchdown milestone.
Yep. With just one more touchdown of any kind, rushing, receiving, whatever, he becomes only the 5th player in NFL history to get 45 total touchdowns in his first 3 seasons.
And the other 4 guys on that list are?
Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson, Gale Sayers, and Earl Campbell.
So just a few Hall of Famers, no big deal.
Just, the Mount Rushmore of running backs. That's the kind of air he's breathing right now.
So what are the predictions looking like? The line is pretty tight.
It is. Detroit is favored by just 2.5 points. Most analysts, like Maldonado and Moody, are picking the Lions to win and cover. Scores like 34-24, 30-27. The FPI gives them a slight edge, about 54%.
But not everyone agrees.
Nope. Walder has the Packers pulling off the upset, 23-17. And you do have to factor in the coaching. Rex Ryan has been all over Dan Campbell's clock management this year.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern.
In a tight divisional game, one bad decision late in the fourth quarter could be the difference. Campbell can't afford one of those aggressive gambles that don't pay off.
And Packers fans have seen this movie before, just last year.
Mm.
They came in as huge underdogs and spoiled the Lions' Thanksgiving.
They did. An 8.5-point dog won 29-22. And that win really kickstarted their whole playoff run. They need that same kind of gritty defensive performance on Thursday.
All right, let's move to the afternoon game. The 4:30 Eastern kickoff. Kansas City Chiefs at the Dallas Cowboys.
A classic matchup. And for the Chiefs, this is all about building on that last win.
That wild comeback against the Colts. They were down 11 in the fourth and pulled it out in overtime.
Right. And Patrick Mahomes said it himself this week. They need to build off that momentum. But that win was more than just a W. It was like a psychological hurdle they finally cleared.
The one-score game narrative.
Exactly. Before that game, they were 0-5 in one-score games this season, which is just bizarre when you remember that last year, on their way to the Super Bowl, they won a record 12-0 in those same situations.
So getting that win, it kind of proves they still have that clutch gene in them, even if it's been heightened all year.
It shows it's still there. No, for the Cowboys, their path to victory is crystal clear. It's all about play action.
Right. Establish the run, then hit him over the top.
100%. Dak Prescott has the best QBR in the entire league on play action passes this year. He's tied for the league lead with 13 touchdowns off of play action.
And that's a huge problem for the Chiefs defense, isn't it?
It's their biggest vulnerability. Kansas City's defense allows an 82% completion rate on play action. They're giving up almost 10 yards per attempt. That's third worst in the NFL.
So if Dallas can get their ground game going early,
it opens up everything. The Chiefs will have to bring a safety down into the box, and that's when Prescott can take his shots downfield. It's a massive tactical mismatch if Dallas can exploit it.
Good news for them on the personnel front, too. George Pickens and Kevontae Turpin are both good to go, no injury designation.
Yep. And, stepping away from the X's and O's for a second, a really great story out of Dallas this week.
The Dak Prescott Initiative.
Yeah. It came out that his charity initiative for cancer screening actually led to a Cowboys executive getting diagnosed early with stage 2 cancer, and it basically saved his life. It's just a great reminder of the impact these guys can have off the field.
It's absolutely incredible story. Okay, back to the game. The predictions here seem pretty one-sided.
Yeah, the consensus is heavily on the Chiefs. Maldonado, Moody, Walder, they all have KC winning. The FPI is really bullish, too. Gives them a 63.6% chance to win by about 5 points.
But there's a trend we need to talk about.
The betting trends, yeah. They tell a different story. The Cowboys have been fantastic as underdogs this year. They're 4-1 against the spread.
Meaning they play better than people expect.
Exactly. And the Chiefs, on the other hand, are just 1-4 against the spread on the road. So while everyone expects a Chiefs win, the numbers suggest this game could be much, much closer than people think.
If the Chiefs need some Thanksgiving road magic to look back on, they've got it.
Oh, yeah. You go back to 1996, Marcus Allen. He passed Walter Payton for the all-time rushing touchdown record with his 111th score against the Lions, helping KC rally for a huge comeback win. That's the kind of grit they'll need in Dallas.
And finally, the nightcap.
Yeah.
The 8:20 kickoff. An AFC North grudge match. Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens.
And the entire story here is the return of one man.
Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow is back after missing 9 games with that turf toe injury. And look, the Bengals' playoff hopes are on life support. ESPN gives them like a 1% chance.
1%.
But that doesn't matter to Burrow. He came out and said, I'm not going to live my life and play this game scared of something happening. If he's healthy enough to play, he's playing.
Which is classic Burrow. But we have to ask, what does a healthy enough Joe Burrow look like? That turf toe injury is no joke for a quarterback's mobility.
That's the huge question. It limits your ability to push off, to extend plays. Does this turn the Bengals into a purely short-passing, timing-based offense? Because if it does, that plays right into the hands of a Ravens defense built to get pressure up the middle.
And this isn't just any game. This is a bitter rivalry.
Oh, yeah. Burrow said he always dreamed of playing on Thanksgiving, but the reality is just pure AFC North hate. He said, you don't like them, it's a division rivalry. And the Bengals are trying to snap a 4-game losing streak to Baltimore.
On the Ravens side, Lamar Jackson is practicing in full, which is good news. But his recent play has been a little concerning.
It has. 0 touchdowns and 2 turnovers in his last 2 starts. The defense is holding up their end, but the offense has been sputtering. You have to wonder if all those nagging injuries, the toe, the ankle, are preventing him from being the Lamar we're used to seeing.
So the predictions are kind of reflecting that offensive uncertainty, right?
They are. The Ravens are favored by a touchdown, 7 points. But both Dejani and Dubin are picking the Bengals to cover that spread. They're predicting really close games like 23-21, 24-20 Ravens.
The thinking being that Baltimore's offense just isn't explosive enough to blow them out.
Exactly. Their offense is ranked 21st in the league. They're not built for blowouts. And Burrow, even at 80 or 90%, is good enough to keep the Bengals in this game and make it a classic down-to-the-wire divisional fight.
All right, that sets the stage for a massive Thanksgiving. But the news cycle, as we know, never sleeps. Let's get into some of the bigger headlines shaking up the league.
And we have to start in the NFC East with the spectacular collapse happening in Philadelphia.
It's a meltdown. Blowing a 21-point lead to the Cowboys.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a loss. That felt like it exposed something rotten at the core.
It did. And the stats are just damning. I mean, they have the worst third and out rate in the league since the 2014 Raiders.
The 2014 Raiders, that's a 5-alarm fire.
It's a total structural failure on offense. And when you can't stay on the field, it just puts immense pressure on your defense. It kills your field position. It's a recipe for losing. Their overall success rate is down to 40%. That's 25th in the league.
And you're starting to see the cracks show in the locker room. Former Eagles QB Rodney P. called out A.J. Brown's body language and public frustration.
Yeah, and that stuff matters. When your number one receiver is openly unhappy, it absolutely affects the quarterback. It undermines Jalen Hurts' leadership at a time when he's already facing questions about his own play.
And the running game isn't helping him out at all. Saquon Barkley, I mean, the explosiveness just isn't there.
It's gone. 10 carries in that loss. And the big stat is he has only 2 rushes of over 20 yards all season.
2. After having 17 last year.
Right. He's not creating those chunk plays that the offense desperately needs, which is why you're hearing some analysts suggest maybe they should give Tank Bigsby more run, just to see if some fresh legs can provide a spark.
Meanwhile, in Dallas, it's a completely different story. Well, kind of. You've got C.D. Lamb taking ownership of his drops.
Yeah, I loved his quote. He said, I need to catch the effing ball. He's being solution-oriented, which is what you want to see.
But his struggles are happening at the exact moment. George Pickens is turning into an absolute superstar.
He's been phenomenal. He's second in the NFL in receiving yards with over 1,008 touchdowns. He is absolutely overshadowing Lamb right now.
Which creates a really tricky contract situation for the Cowboys, doesn't it?
It's a massive strategic puzzle for them. They want to extend him, but they also have to pay Dak, Micah Parsons, and Lamb. There's only so much money to go around.
So this is where the franchise tag comes in.
This is exactly why the franchise tag exists. In 2026, they can tag him for 1 year, probably for around $28 million.
Yeah, and that buys them time.
It buys them time and flexibility. They get to keep their star receiver for a year while they sort out the other massive contracts. Pickens camp wants a huge deal now, but the Cowboys might want to see one more year of this production and, frankly, this maturity before they commit that kind of long-term cash.
Okay, let's shift gears to a rookie QB who is just a lightning rod for conversation right now. Shedeur Sanders in Cleveland.
Yeah, he wins his first start, first Browns QB to do that in 3 decades. He's now the starter moving forward, even with Dylan Gabriel clearing protocol. But the football story is almost secondary to the cultural story around him.
He's tried to downplay it, saying he's just trying to do his job. But others are not.
Not at all. You have guys like Sean Merriman defending his confidence, saying that little bit of cockiness is exactly what a locker room needs. It gives them an edge, a belief they can win.
And then the conversation goes to a whole other level. And we have to be clear here. We're just reporting what's being said by prominent analysts.
Right. Impartially. You have someone like Emmanuel Acho claiming the NFL colluded to push Sanders out of the first round. He's even called him the public sports face of oppression.
Which is an incredibly heavy label.
It's immense. Acho's argument is that the media and scouts scrutinize Sanders' confidence, his jewelry, his flash, in a way they would never scrutinize a white quarterback. He believes it's a clear example of systemic bias in the evaluation process.
And you have Kendrick Perkins comparing him to Barack Obama.
Calling him the most powerful black man in sports. It's a massive amount of pressure and expectation to put on a rookie after one single start. He has become this symbol, and now he has to go out and prove on the field that he can sustain this level of play week after week.
From a rookie on the rise to coaches who might be on their way out, the hot seats are scorching right now.
And nowhere more than in Las Vegas. The Raiders are in a free fall. Pete Carroll is facing real one-and-done talk.
Firing 3 assistants in 3 weeks, including Chip Kelly?
Mm.
That feels like a desperate move.
It is a desperate move, and what makes it more interesting is the Tom Brady angle. Reports are saying Brady was a huge advocate for bringing Kelly in, and now he's deeply disappointed with the whole team's performance, not just the offense.
Having your new minority owner, who happens to be the GO, disappointed in you? That can't be a good feeling for Carroll.
No, it is not. The pressure is on. He has to show some sign of life in these final 6 games, or that one-and-done buzz could become a reality.
Who else is feeling the heat?
ESPN is keeping a close eye on Cincinnati and Atlanta. Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. Yeah, Burrow got hurt, but they're about to miss the playoffs for a 3rd straight year after making back-to-back AFC title games.
Yeah.
That's a big step backward.
And Mike McDaniel in Miami.
He's an interesting case. The team started 1-6. So they've won 3 of their last 4. The owner seems to believe in him. He's got a soft schedule coming up, so he has a real chance to coach his way off the hot seat.
And quickly, a roster note out of Washington. It sounds like they're preparing to move on from a legend.
Yeah, Bobby Wagner. He's 35, and while he's been a great leader, his age is starting to show, especially in pass coverage. They're expected to reduce his snaps after the bye week and get some of their younger linebackers, like Jordan McGee, more playing time to build for the future.
A tough but necessary move. All right, let's hit the transaction wire. The Buffalo Bills made a big shakeup this week.
A huge one. They're clearly all in on this season. They cut receiver Elijah Moore, an acquisition that just did not work out at all.
9 catches in 9 games. Yeah, that's not getting it done.
Not even close. So to fill that void, they went out and signed a proven veteran, Brandon Cooks.
He asked for his release from the Saints and got it.
Yep. And even at 32, Cooks is a massive upgrade. He's a reliable route runner with 6 1,000-yard seasons under his belt. He gives them a legitimate deep threat on the perimeter that they have been desperately missing.
So he joins a room with Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and Curtis Samuel. That looks a lot better on paper.
A lot better? If he can build a quick rapport with his quarterback, he could really change the ceiling of that entire offense for the December push.
Now, over to New England, where they are facing a crisis on the offensive line.
A major crisis. Their rookie left tackle, Will Campbell, is on injured reserve. He's out for at least 4 games.
Losing your blindside protector is just a nightmare scenario. And it sounds like Mike Vrabel doesn't have an easy answer.
He was very noncommittal. The options are Vedarian Lowes, who was inconsistent last year, or a rookie, Marcus Bryant, who has mostly played right tackle. Neither is a great solution.
And yet, despite all that chaos, the Patriots are still a 7.5-point favorite over the Giants this week.
It's incredible, isn't it? It just tells you everything you need to know about the current state of the New York Giants. Vegas thinks their problems are way, way worse than the Patriots' offensive line disaster.
A few other quick injury updates. Drake London is doubtful for the Falcons.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. When he's out, Kirk Cousins has to spread the ball around to, like, seven different guys, and none of them are a true number one. It really limits their passing game.
The Chiefs will be shorthanded on Thanksgiving, too. Right guard Smith is out.
Yep, that's a loss on the interior that could make it harder for them to establish that run game we talked about.
Good news for the Broncos, though. They locked up defensive tackle Malcolm Roach with a 3-year extension.
Smart move, building from the inside out on defense.
And finally, down in the AFC South, the league might be figuring out the Colts.
It sure seems like it. Daniel Jones is facing a lot of skepticism after 2 straight losses, and the formula seems to be simple. Stop Jonathan Taylor.
The Steelers and Chiefs both held him under 60 yards.
And when you do that, it puts the whole game on Daniel Jones's arm, forces them into obvious passing situations, and that's just not where they want to be. The shine is definitely wearing off in Indy.
All right, let's pivot to the college game. It is rivalry week, and it does not get bigger than what's happening in Ann Arbor on Saturday.
The game. Number 1, Ohio State at number 18, Michigan. The stakes are just off the charts.
This is basically a playoff elimination game. And Michigan, despite winning the last 4 in this rivalry, they're a huge underdog.
A 9.5-point underdog at home. Their whole identity is running the football. Marshall and Haynes have been a two-headed monster all year.
But their identity is in trouble.
It is. Justice Haynes is doubtful for the game. And if their running game is neutralized, they are in deep, deep trouble. They are not built to play from behind and win a shootout.
And Ohio State is the worst possible matchup for them if they can't run.
The absolute worst. Michigan's secondary is the weakest part of their defense, and Ohio State has a fleet of 5-star receivers like Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, who are both expected back from injury. They can exploit that matchup all day long.
And the Ohio State defense is just suffocating.
It's statistically dominant. They've only allowed 19 opponent trips to the red zone all year and only 7 touchdowns.
7 touchdowns in 12 games inside the 20. That's unbelievable.
Right. It's game changing. It means even if Michigan moves the ball, they're settling for field goals. And you can't beat this Ohio State team trading field goals for touchdowns.
Plus, they're elite against the run. So they're built to stop the one thing Michigan wants to do.
Everything on paper points to an Ohio State win, and probably a comfortable one. They're just built to bury teams like this.
Yeah, there's that historical trend that gives you pause.
There is. Michigan has covered the spread in 4 straight games against Ohio State, and all 4 were outright wins. That's the longest streak in this rivalry since the FBS-FCS split back in 1978.
So for nearly 50 years, no Michigan team has defied expectations against Ohio State like this current group has.
It's a genuine historical phenomenon. Now, Ohio State is 8-1 against ranked teams since last year, so they know how to handle the big stage. But that trend, it makes this game fascinating.
While that rivalry plays out, the coaching carousel is spinning like crazy.
It is. And we have our first big move. Jim Mora is leaving UConn for Colorado State.
That's a great hire for Colorado State. He completely resurrected that UConn program.
He did. It's video game numbers. And Bo Brungard at Youngstown State with 24 rushing touchdowns. It's just great to see these guys get the national recognition they deserve.
Absolutely. Okay, let's bring it home with some fantasy football advice. It is crunch time, week 13. Every decision matters.
It really does. Let's start at quarterback. Jalen Hurts, despite all the Eagles' issues, is still the consensus QB1 this week against a soft Bears defense.
Patrick Mahomes is QB2. And Joe Burrow, in his return, is ranked 11th, so a cautious top 12 play.
Right. The analysts are baking in a little risk with that turk toe. And for the Thanksgiving games, the QBs are not ranked highly. Goff is 14th, Jordan Love is down at 20th. That Packers-Lions game is expected to be a slugfest.
At running back, Jahmyr Gibbs is now an elite must-start.
Oh, yeah. He's ranked RB3 overall. He has fully taken over that backfield and is getting massive volume as both a runner and a receiver.
The trickiest situation is the Chiefs' backfield.
It's very tricky. Kareem Hunt got 30 touches last week, but Isaiah Pacheco is expected back for Thanksgiving. Pacheco is ranked RB35, which tells you there's a ton of uncertainty.
If Pacheco's fully healthy, he could be a league winner down the stretch, right? We saw what he did in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely. He thrives on volume, but we just don't know if he'll get a full workload right away. So starting him this week is a risky proposition, whereas Hunt feels like a safer floor play.
And Saquon Barkley is still ranked as RB10, but that's almost purely based on volume.
It is. You're not counting on those home run plays anymore. You're just hoping he falls into the end zone.
Any waiver wire guys we should be looking at?
I like Chimere Dyke, the wide receiver for the Titans. When he gets targets, he produces. He's had a couple of good games recently, and he's also a great returner, which just speaks to his overall athleticism. A good stash for a deep league.
Okay, let's wrap with this. Who are the most important players for the real life and fantasy playoff stretch?
Dan Graziano from ESPN says it's Jalen Hurts. He's the only one who can quiet all the noise about the Eagles' offense being a mess. If he gets back to his MVP form, he can carry fantasy teams and the actual Eagles.
I'll go with Patrick Mahomes. It's all about those one-score games. If he rediscovers that clutch magic from last season, the Chiefs become terrifying again, and he becomes the fantasy QB1 we all drafted him to be.
And my final one is Lamar Jackson. He is the key to unlocking that Ravens offense. The big question is, can his body hold up? If his legs are healthy and he starts running like the old Lamar, Baltimore becomes a true Super Bowl contender, and he becomes a top five fantasy QB again.
Three massive stars with the weight of their teams on their shoulders for this final push.
It's the theme every single year at this time, isn't it? The pressure just ramps up and you find out who these guys really are.
And what a week we have ahead of us. From the Thanksgiving games to the biggest college rivalry game in years.
Exactly. Yeah. And I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on. We talked a lot about Shedeur Sanders and this idea of confidence. Well, I want you to think about that razor-thin line between confidence and questionable decision-making. We've seen that second part from guys like Brock Purdy, J.J. McCarthy, even Daniel Jones in key moments this year. December is where the pressure exposes you. So my question for you is, what will these next 6 weeks tell us about the long-term future of those quarterbacks? Will they prove they have the clutch gene when the games matter most?
A great question to think about this weekend. Thank you for joining us for another Essential Football Army Breakdown. We'll catch you next time.